For great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. Deconstructing PSYOPs, propaganda, and mainstream media BS. You're with Brian McClain, a.k.a. Hesher, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the show. You are listening to today's News Talk. That's tntradio.live on the interwebs, so join us over there on the website. It's a brisk Texas morning out here, 39 degrees when I went outside this morning. So, yeah, gotta love it. Gotta love it. Some people would think Texas never gets cold, but it does. It gets cold out here. We had, February 2021, we had an absolute freeze out here. It was crazy. It was a total ice storm. The whole area I'm in central Texas was frozen over for about 3 days. No power the entire time. It was pretty shocking, actually, to experience that. But yeah, out here in Texas, it does get cold, everybody. So if you're thinking about moving out here to Texas from one of those nasty blue states, well, bring a jacket. You'll need it in the wintertime. All right, we got a great show lined up for you today. My third hour co-host, CeCe Woods, and I will be joined by Michael Gates, and we'll look further into midterm elections, Carrie Lake's defeat, and the potential for using Huntington Beach as a test case for how to hold on to one's own towns and cities in a demonocracy that is in decline here, a democracy declining into demonocracy. In the second hour, I'll be speaking with Kevin Jenkins. Kevin will be returning to the show. Great guest. Looking forward to speaking with him. And in this hour, we'll be joined by Martin Seif. Once again, another returning guest. Great guest. So, yeah, we'll take a couple headlines here before we get Darren Denslow online. What's going on in Afghanistan? You know, we had that terrible pullout from Afghanistan. Did not go very well. It was definitely a muddy mark that it left on the Obama. Oh, wait, no, I mean Biden administration. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Anyways, did we all kind of forget? So this headline reads, Afghanistan goes full Sharia. Taliban Supreme Leader Mullah Habibullah Askandaza, wow, that's a mouthful, has ordered Afghan judges to fully implement Sharia law and its punishments, which include mutilations, flogging, executions of different sorts. Yeah, so that's going on. The announcement was made on Sunday by the Taliban chief spokesman Zabihullah Mujahid. I'm not going to bother you with the details on that one. I just found that interesting that we've only pulled out that long ago, and now that has gone that direction. Here's another one. France warned of possible blackouts. Country faces a power supply crunch this winter. National grid operator is warning. France risks running short of electricity for several days this winter as a result of lower than usual nuclear plant availability. So Bloomberg reported that on Monday, and according to EDF, Electricité de France, repairs and maintenance on almost half of its nuclear plants may turn the country, a traditional power exporter, into an importer this year. Under this scenario, French customers would have to pay a premium to their neighbors, where prices have been soaring lately. So there you go. Not looking good there, but that's not news to us, is it, if we've been paying attention? Energy crisis, definitely going to be a thing as things get colder, especially in Europe this year. Going to be interesting to see how that all plays out for everybody. I hope everybody's into a little bit of austerity to support the democracy, right? The democracy in Ukraine, where they have state-run media and where they are tying people to polls. What else we got? Poland to seize Russian assets, says the media here. Warsaw is set to confiscate assets of Russian energy major Gazprom. The country's media reported on Monday the move will target the company's 48% stake in Europol Gaz, which owns the Polish section of the Yamal Europe pipeline that carried Russian gas to the EU. The decision to seize Gazprom shares was reportedly made by Minister of Development and Technology, Wedmar Buda, at the request of Poland's internal security agency. It is intended to, quote, ensure the security of Poland's critical infrastructure, end quote. So more seizing of Russian assets. I guess that's just going to be something that happens ongoing as we work our way through the current conflict. So yeah, there you go. A few headlines for you. If you missed your favorite TNT or radio show or interview, simply listen back when you want, wherever you want. Really easy to do. Just visit episodes on the TNT Radio website. We're also on all those major podcast platforms, you know, so you can just go to whatever podcast platform you like, whether it's Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Podbean, iHeart, TuneIn, Google, whatever, and just run a search on Brian McLean and whatever guest you want to hear if you missed one, or whatever host, you know, if you missed Patrick Henningsen in the previous hour, just search his name and his guest. And there you go. You have it. And we will keep you up to speed on TNT.
Keeping you updated on the latest.
In the car while I'm driving home.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right. So Zelensky rules out a return to the Minsk peace deals, which is interesting. That is the one thing that probably could have stopped all of this if they would have just done that. So Kiev would require new security guarantees to end the conflict. Ukrainian leader has told the G20. So here to discuss is TNT news producer Darren Denslow. Darren, welcome to the show.
Good to see you, Brian. Good effort on those Afghanistan names. I was trying not to crack up too much.
No, it's fun. I love names I can't pronounce, man. I always have a good time with that.
They sounded far more difficult than some of these Russian names. Zelensky rules out return to Minsk peace deal. And the operative word in that sentence was peace. So he's basically saying he rules out peace deal that was already in place. Yeah, the conflict between Ukraine and Russia can be stopped, Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky said in his video address to the G20 on Tuesday, adding that peace should be reached outside of the Minsk format. I'm convinced now is the time when the Russian destructive war must and can be stopped, Zelensky told world leaders in Bali, Indonesia, where the G20 conference is taking place. And it's worth noting, Ukraine is not part of the G20. The conflict must end fairly and on the basis of the UN Charter, the Ukrainian leader insisted. However, he pointed out that Ukraine shouldn't be offered compromises with its sovereignty, territorial integrity, and independence. Obviously, Russia's words can't be trusted, and there will be no Minsk III that Russia will violate immediately after the signing, Zelensky claimed, adding that Moscow mustn't be allowed to freeze the conflict and regroup its forces. We need effective security guarantees, he said, according to the president. The Ukrainian government has already prepared a draft of a new pact called the Kiev Security Compact, the deal, which he claimed would make another conflict in Eastern Europe impossible, could be signed at an international conference that could be held this year, Zelensky claimed. So what is the Minsk agreement? Now, I've just taken some sort of generic statement offline, but the agreement consisted of a package of measures, including a ceasefire, withdraw heavy weapons from the front line, release of prisoners of war, constitutional reform in Ukraine, granting self-government to certain areas of the Donbass region, and restoring control of the state border to the Ukrainian government. So effectively, what Russia has done since, as this Minsk agreement was never, ever kept to by the Ukrainians, who continued to bomb and hurt the Russian-speaking people of the Donbass region, which this Minsk agreement was put in place for, it is actually the fact that the Ukrainians never kept to the Minsk agreement why there's a conflict in Ukraine right now. And it was a peace deal. And obviously, Russia has now taken those territories and repatriated them into Russia. Obviously, there's still conflict there. We still see that, you know, the Ukrainian army has gone into the Kherson region in the south, which is part of that repatriated region of Ukraine. So I'll go back to the article, Brian. Be quick as I can, mate. The rejection of the Minsk format by the Ukrainian president absolutely confirms the unwillingness of Kiev to negotiate with Moscow, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said when asked to comment on Zelensky's G20 speech. The Minsk 1 and 2 accords were signed in 2014 and 2015 through the mediation of Germany, France, and Russia. They were designed to put an end to agreements. They were designed to put an end to the agreements, has been cited by the Kremlin as a key reason for the launch of its military operation in late Feb. Former Ukrainian President Poroshenko has since admitted that the Minsk agreements were only used by Kiev to buy time to create a powerful armed force so that they could coax the Russians into their country as per their instructions via NATO in the US, so that they could create the conflict that we have now. So there is a peace deal there, oven ready, as we might say in the UK. And Zelensky has ruled out that peace deal. Anything but the peace deal, he's saying, that we signed 7, 8, 9 years ago. So what do you think about this sort of latest statement by Zelensky in a video address to the G20?
It's almost like... Why would you even say that, Zelensky? Obviously, especially, you know, and you mentioned the Poroshenko statement recently. You know, we covered that on the show weeks ago, I think. You know, that was kind of another just sort of duh moment. You know, obviously, that's what they were doing, obviously. And now they admit it, you know. So Poroshenko admits basically that entire, what was it, 7, 8 year period of time, they were not following the Minsk agreements. They had no intentions of following the Minsk agreements, and they were pretty simple agreements. You know what I mean? It was kind of like, could you please stop shelling these people? And could you please stop tying them to poles? And could you please stop turning the power off? And could you please stop with the making their language illegal and their culture illegal and subjugating them for, you know, being basically Russian speaking, you know, Russian culture people. But no, they weren't interested in that. And, you know, that comment that Poroshenko made about building up an army. Well, look at the army they built up. You know, we had John McCain and Lindsey Graham flying over there and promising Ukrainian Nazi groups, militants, that they would support them in their, you know, struggle with Russia. And, you know, and then you compare all this to what Putin's original comment was when it came out in February. And, folks, if you're not caught up on all that, please just take a look at read what Putin said, and then, check out what the Minsk agreement was, and then, watch the film Burnt Alive in Odessa, about the events in 2014. And then read Poroshenko's comments, and then read these latest from Zelensky. And, you know, if you're not caught up, you will be pretty well caught up, at least at the high level. You want to dive deeper than that, then get into the Telegram channels and start watching the independent journalists that are out there and read what they're seeing on the ground, you know. And that's how you end up getting for an American in Texas who's never been to Ukraine, never been to Russia, simply trying to understand these things from the media feeds, that to me, at least in my experience, that's probably the best place to gain context, you know, the best path of research to gain context. It's almost a non-story, but it is a story, you know, because it's like they're telling you, you know, that this term seems to be going like wildfire, but they're saying the quiet part out loud.
Yeah, and actually Putin and Russia, since February when they went into Ukraine, have actually tried to sort of carry out through forceful means the aspects of the Minsk agreement. So he's given the Donbass region and the Luhansk region and the Donetsk area, he's given all those people the vote, because one of the parts of the Minsk agreement is that they would have a democratic vote on whether they could join Russia or stay as part of the Ukraine. So he's done that. He's stopped, to some extent, the Ukrainian shelling who are effectively Russian-speaking people, or people who have now voted to be part of Russia. So he's gone in and denazified. These are all the objectives that Putin originally set out in February that were sort of implicit in the Minsk agreement. So he's had no choice, has he? Because, you know, they had a peace deal. It wasn't kept to by the Ukrainians. So 8 years later, pretty patient, he's gone in to try and enact the peace deal. And that peace deal still remains on the table. And Zelensky is saying, oh, I want peace. I want a peaceful resolution, but it can't be that peace deal, because that peace deal would mean he loses the land, doesn't he? And quietly, yeah, in behind the scenes, and I think Zelensky is quite a little bit miffed by this, is that the top US general's comments on peace talks has angered Ukraine. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff urged Kiev to seize the moment for diplomacy with Russia. And obviously they are, I think, intimating, saying, oh, look, there is a peace deal on the table. You can sort of, if it's up and ready, you can take it. And obviously that's upset the Ukrainians. I'll just read a couple of lines here. The administration of US President Joe Biden is attempting to reassure Ukraine that it's not pressing Kiev into peace talks with Moscow after a top US general alluded to a window for a diplomatic solution to the conflict. This was reported by Politico. According to Ukrainian and US officials interviewed by the outlet, Washington is signaling to Kiev that any winter lull in fighting doesn't mean talks should happen imminently, while vowing to continue supporting Ukraine militarily. Ukrainian concerns that the US could push Kiev into seeking a peace settlement with Moscow were fueled by recent comments by General Mark Milley, the chairman of the US Joint Chiefs of Staff, who said Ukraine could not achieve a military victory, while noting that winter may present an opportunity for diplomatic engagement. When there's an opportunity to negotiate, when peace can be achieved, seize it, seize the moment, he stated. And there seems to be pushback on these statements, which seem to me some of the most reasonable statements that have come out of the US administration recently with regard to the Ukraine conflict.
Yeah, exactly. It's so weird. It's just like, we want peace, but we want peace through utter war. We want to see Vladimir Putin toppled. And you know what I mean? I've seen Zelensky say stuff like that too, that, you know, their actual goal is to take Russia in the long run. And it's like, I'm not seeing any military strategists out there that are sort of hyped on that idea. But, you know, so yeah, peace through war, I guess. Peace through war, and put a lot of people in a meat grinder, right? And while the rest of us can't turn on our frickin' heaters, or maybe don't have power or can't afford fuel, you know, to enable that. So what a mess, man. What an absolute mess.
I mean, it's like you said, yeah, peace through war. It's incredibly Orwellian, isn't it? And
it is.
And to think, you know, oh, the US administration is reassuring Ukraine that it's not pressing Kiev into peace talks. No, they should be pressing Kiev into peace talks. Both sides should be pressed together and say, hey, you've got us oven ready, peace deal. Some of it's now been enacted by force. The Russian has taken the land that you were shelling and that you wouldn't give a democratic vote to. It looks like Russia are really forcing the issue. Maybe we can just go, oh, we'll go to the Minsk deal and we could both walk away and be happy. But, you know, the American government aren't pressing for that. They're not pushing for that. And right at the same time, and I don't have the story here, the US are planning to send some very high-tech military drones that they're despecifying. They're downgrading a little bit in case it falls into Russian hands because of the technology contained in these. So as much as we've got some of this talk here from Mark Milley, General Mark Milley, that seems quite hopeful for a peaceful solution. On the other hand, the military industrial complex is still looking to send more and more upgraded high-tech weaponry to that combat zone, that conflict zone.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Cool. I'm glad we talked about this, because Martin Seif is joining us after a quick break here, and we're going to pick up that thread, talk a little bit more about Mark Milley and this current topic. So Thank you, Darren. Very timely today. Cheers. Thank you for everything you do. Appreciate you. And Cheers. We'll see you tomorrow, my friend.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye-bye.
There he is. There he is. There he goes, everybody. Darren Denslow. All right. Well, hey, you know, we want to know what you really think. So tell us about what you think about the hashtag current thing. Get on a soapbox over there. Tell us what you really think at tntradio.live. Upload some video, some audio, drop us a note in the soapbox. Help us light that fuse for freedom on today's news talk. We'll be right back.
You should hear what Jeremy Nell is talking about.
We keep hearing the term sustainable development. Now, that's a real thing, and there's no ways we can pretend it's not happening. So the best thing to do right now is to know what it is and then to buffer against it.
A lot of these terms like sustainable and, you know, resilient, saving the planet, and the way that the idea is pitched sounds very plausible and sounds something like we should be concerned about. And indeed we should. I mean, there are many aspects of what we're doing to the environment that we should be concerned about. You know, we are causing environmental damage with our industrial practices around the world. There's no doubt about that. And I think that's important to acknowledge. But sustainable development as it is pitched at the moment focuses very much upon the bogeyman of carbon dioxide in terms of CO2 emissions and the claimed need that we need to reduce CO2 emissions. The solution that is on offer at a globalist level hasn't really got anything to do with reducing carbon emissions. It's about a restructuring of the global economy and about the introduction of a new international monetary and financial system.
Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Let's take advantage of the freedoms that we have while we have them to advance the kingdom's objective to be salt and light.
Freedom is hard. Election security involves you, involves the voters.
This election for people of faith is vital that we see a change, because the war against Christians is at an all-time high.
Transparency is the key not only to having honest elections, but to maintaining public trust in those elections.
Our ability to vote is not being withheld from us. No one's trying to stop you from voting.
The one place the American people can have a say is at the ballot box. That's why the Democrats and the far left are working so hard to get rid of all election integrity.
We cannot let our elections be anything but transparent. It is at the very heart of freedom in a free society.
And if we lose America, I mean, it's all over, because the world has looked to America for hope.
Free and fair at salemnow.com.
The news everyone is talking about. TNT Radio, where the longer you listen, the more reasons you find to keep listening. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
All right, welcome back. My guest is a senior fellow of the American University in Moscow, and former senior foreign correspondent for the Washington Times, and former managing editor, International Affairs, United Press International. He's a historian and a three-time Pulitzer Prize nominee for international affairs. He co-founded the Society for Interdisciplinary Studies and served as an associate editor of SIS Review and then of its companion magazine, SIS Workshop. He then began an association with Catastrophism and Ancient History, serving eventually as one of its senior editors. He has a master's in modern history from Oxford, specializing in modern U.S. history. I'm very, very happy to welcome back to the show Mr. Martin Seif. Martin, welcome back, and how are you doing today?
Doing well so far. A pleasure to be with you again. Thank you so much, Brian.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you on the show, as always, sir. And so I was speaking with one of our news producers, Darren Denslow, before you came on here, and we were talking about Ukraine. We're kind of going over this this topic of the Minsk peace deals, you know. And so Zelensky told the G20 recently that Kiev would require new security guarantees to end the conflict, and basically said they were not interested in returning to the Minsk peace deals. And we had Poroshenko come out recently and admit that they were stalling on the Minsk peace deals while they were building up their armed forces for the conflict that we're currently seeing here. And then we've got top U.S. generals talking about peace deals in Ukraine. So what do you think about all that? I love the, by the way, I love the quote that was on my read ahead there. As General Omar Bradley famously said, amateurs talk strategy, professionals talk logistics. So what do you make of all this that's going on right now?
I think you've given the key to it already, Brian. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs, the top-ranking military officer, and not just the U.S. Army, but all the U.S. Armed Forces, is General Mark Milley. And it's very fashionable among people on both the left and the right to sneer at top generals, and General Milley in particular. But if one looks at him and his career, one sees a very serious, patriotic, and responsible man. And what it's very significant that right now General Milley, of all people, is not being a warmonger. He is looking for a negotiated peace settlement with the Russians to defuse the Ukraine crisis and end the killing in Ukraine. Now, why is he doing that? Why is the top-ranking, most experienced military officer in the U.S. Armed Forces being so much more moderate and responsible than so many Republicans and Democrats alike in the Congress and across Washington, D.C.? Well, the answer is actually obvious. It is because he knows a lot more than they do. Our policy of arming Ukraine to the hilt has been a catastrophe, and the blowback is coming too. It was first a catastrophe because it encouraged the irresponsible people who are not even puppets, but they're more like tails that wag our dogs, Zelensky and Poroshenko and their friends, to put the poor Ukrainian people in as cannon fodder to be slaughtered by the Russians. And Ukrainian dead over the last year, this past year, is now estimated reliably at around 100,000 people. This is the biggest death toll there has been in any war in Europe since 1945, since World War II. This is a catastrophe. And this is even apart from the danger of it escalating into nuclear war. We have to stop and give relief to the Ukrainian people. And that does not mean giving a blank check to the adventurers and incompetent gangsters who claim to be representing them and really do not. That's the first point. But there's a second point General Milley understands extremely well. The Biden administration's policy of arming Ukraine to the hilt, eagerly followed by our allies in Britain and France and Germany, was cynical. It was feeding up, encouraging the Ukrainian people, as I said, to die as cannon fodder. But it has now backfired catastrophically on NATO and the United States of America, because we don't have the weapons anymore to fight a sustained war against Russia if one comes up. The Russians are serious about land warfare. They have been expanding their military production. And this is where your quote from General Bradley, who was, let's remember, the most effective combat commander we had in World War II. Patton got all the that was revered by the amateurs. Neocons love Patton. And Patton was a genius at pursuit. But the American general who kept breaking the Germans in battle, who fought difficult battles and beat them every time in Normandy, in Sicily, in Tunisia, and in the Battle of the Bulge and in the Rhineland, it was always Omar N. Bradley. And what did General Bradley say? You said it yourself, Brian. Professionals talk logistics. You cannot fight a modern industrial war if you do not have the reserves to do it. We have not expanded our industrial base over the last year in any significant way to produce more weapons. Instead, we took all our reserves, gave it to the Ukrainians, who were brave but amateurish and hugely disorganized and run by corrupt gangsters and clowns. And so all those weapons were wasted and lost. And the Russians laugh at it. The Russians took significant casualties too. There's no question about that. But not remotely as much as the poor Ukrainians did. Not remotely. And what's the end result? The end result is actually halfway around the world. We see China moving against Taiwan. And it's interesting that President Xi of China has just met President Biden at Bali, and he sized him up. When Nikita Khrushchev met President John Kennedy in Vienna in 1961, he sized him up. He actually underestimated President Kennedy. He thought President Kennedy was a softy, which he assuredly, thank God, was not. But he then pressed the buttons to put missiles into Cuba and came to the brink of a thermonuclear war with the United States. And Khrushchev, to his...
Got a slight drop out there. All right. Hold that thought, Martin, if you can hear me. We're going to take a quick headline, and hopefully our connection will free back up here. You're listening to TNT, everybody. We'll be right back.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. Turkey has rejected condolences from the United States following the weekend's deadly terrorist attack that killed six people in Istanbul. A new survey has found the majority of Russian businesses have adjusted to Western sanctions and continue to operate as usual. And Japan has offered to host Australia's nuclear submarines once they are built.
Wake up and text. Text and eat. Mm-mm. Text and catch the bus. Text and miss your stop.
Wait.
Text and be late to work.
Sorry, I'm late.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time.
Ugh.
Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
If you miss your favorite TNT radio show or interview, simply listen back when you want, wherever you want. Just visit episodes on the TNT Radio website. We're also on all major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, Podbean, iHeart, and TuneIn. Now there's no reason to miss out on anything on TNT Radio.
I like the music, the background music on that Don't Text and Drive commercial. It's got kind of a Starsky and Hutch theme to it. I don't know. It feels a little bit 70s. Tickles my 70s vibes. All right, welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. We're with Martin Seif here, and we were just talking before we had a little bit of an interruption there, but I believe we've got Martin back. Martin,
before you
froze up. Okay, great. Welcome back. Before you froze up, you were talking about how Z had sized up Biden, and you're kind of comparing that to Khrushchev, JFK. So feel
exactly.
Free to pick up where you left off.
The
there.
Danger we now see, Brian, is that on top of our crisis in Ukraine, the Chinese may use this to move against Taiwan. And what can we do? We have a first-class Navy and Air Force, but they know it's extremely dangerous for them to operate that close to China. We can whip China in most parts of the world because we have global superiority, but the Chinese have air superiority and a formidable submarine fleet and most of all a formidable missile fleet force that they can deploy close to their own homeland and in the Taiwan area and in the Taiwan Straits. And on top of that, our army and Air Force are now stripped of munitions because we gave so much to Ukraine and we did not rapidly expand our industrial base. It wasn't even enough to replenish what we had. Our people, as General Milley and his advisors, warned in vain. Our top military people, thank God, are not fools. But the politicians at times have to listen to the military professionals, and they did not. As usual, they simply took the easy road out. They did not. There's a very interesting. We don't think of Jesus of Nazareth as a great strategist, but he was that too. In the Gospels, Jesus says, "No one moves against an army of 20,000 men with only 10,000 men unless he has counted the cost in advance and thinks he can still survive and thinks he can still win." I paraphrase a little there, but if you go back to the reference in the Gospels, it
it's very clear. Jesus hung out, we know from the Gospels, with Roman centurions. He was often criticized by his fellow Jews at the time for doing this. But as a result, Jesus had a military perspective, a realistic military perspective, that he tried to warn his fellow Jews at the time in vain about. Politicians tend to lack that perspective too, as you pointed out before, Brian. General Milley is there to warn them in advance, and he and his colleagues have been warning them. That is why General Milley is pushing for a peaceful solution in Ukraine. The cliche about generals is they always want war, they're stupid. That's not usually the case, thankfully. It was in World War I, it can be at times, obviously. But by and large, many of our military people, not all of them, of course, but if you look at General Schwarzkopf and his victory in 1991, for example, or the tactical competence we had in sweeping through Iraq, we messed up the war strategically and politically afterwards. But tactically, our forces knew exactly what they were doing. Right now, we are in a very dangerous situation, and that's why General Milley is trying to avoid a catastrophe with the warnings he is giving.
Absolutely amazing. You would think, I mean, credit to the dreaded Politico for even publishing this. But you know, it's interesting. Aside from that article, it's like I have to go to foreign outlets pretty much to find information about our own top military brass saying, hey, maybe we shouldn't escalate this thing. And if I recall, President Z and Erdogan from Turkey, Putin himself, Milley now. I mean, those are like the main superpowers, representatives from the main superpowers, if not the highest position in these superpowers, all saying, hey, maybe we shouldn't escalate this. This is going to get out of control. It's already out of control, as you've pointed out, you know, and that amount of casualties, it's amazing, Martin. You know, I just spent the last 2 years watching a casualty ticker on CNN and all the other things for COVID. They love telling us how many people allegedly were testing PCR positive and dying of or with COVID, but they have no interest in telling us the actual toll on the Ukrainian people when it comes to loss of life for them while they're getting us to cheerlead for all this. It's just amazing.
You're absolutely right, Brian. There was, I'm not sure if he's still alive or not, but there was a very fine British historian and journalist, a war correspondent called Philip Knightley, K-N-I-H-T-L-E-Y, I think is the way the name is spelled. And a number of years ago, he wrote a famous book called The First Casualty. And the whole theme of his book is whenever a war breaks out, the first casualty of the war is truth, because everyone who is fighting the war, both the good guys as well as the bad guys, both sides, whatever they're talking about, they try to manipulate the truth, because war is messy and wasteful and chaotic and bloody. So even if you're on the good guys, you're going to make huge embarrassing mistakes and you want to cover them up, and everyone does. So everyone tries to cover up what is really happening in war. They do it on the other side, and we do it on our side. It's human nature. It's universal human experience. And anyone who plunges into a war has to recognize this. We think of Winston Churchill as a great war leader and hero, and he was. But people forget that after World War I, Churchill, in his memoirs at the end of the 1920s, is writing about the Boer War. By modern standards, a very small war, which was fought between the British and the white Boer republics, which were very racist at the time, in southern Africa. And the British thought they would have a walkover, and they won in the end because they were the global superpower, but they had many embarrassments and defeats along the way. It was terribly costly and embarrassing for them. And Churchill looked back on that, and he said, this is Winston Churchill talking, never, never, never go to war. You don't know what is going to happen next. And then Churchill, of all people, added, remember, there would never be any wars if the other side did not think they had a chance to win too. We have forgotten that General Milei has not forgotten that wise principle, but our political leaders have. President Biden needs to fire his Secretary of State, his Secretary of Defense, and his National Security Advisor. They are a menace to the Republic. They are useless. Jake Sullivan in particular doesn't have a clue. It's embarrassing even to say it about a fellow Irishman, but there you are. I wish you were National Security Advisor. There is no question you do an infinitely superior job. And this is not empty flattery. It's very clear from what your own track record of warning in vain about the dangers we are facing.
Hey, I'll take it. If someone wants to nominate me, I'll take it. I'll do a good job. And I'm not going to...
I think you are, man. Absolutely.
Maybe me and you could go in there and fill a couple of these positions and sort this all out. You know, someone's been in there making terrible, terrible decisions for too many years now.
Exactly.
I think you're right.
Exactly.
The political leaders have just forgotten all these lessons. And it strikes me that, you know, our military, I feel so terrible, you know, for the military, the U.S. military. It's like, what happened to the leadership there? You know, I mean, they've got issues with all kinds of things. I mean, logistics, like we were talking about, you know, all of our military programs, you know, that the mainstream media, they love that American superiority when it comes to the global, you know, the world police thing. But as you've pointed out, it's looking really bad here. I noticed they're even setting up, I don't know why the DOD is doing this right now, but they're trying to, they put a new contract out with Sig Sauer. They're bringing in a new battle rifle and a new set of ammunition too. They're using a 6.5 millimeter round, I think, in this new battle rifles. And I'm just an observer here, but I've watched a number of former military people, you know, expert special operation forces people looking at this new rifle, and it's a great rifle. Don't get me wrong. It's cool. And the round is really cool too, but is this really the right time to just trash the M4 for an experimental, they're calling it the XM5, I believe. It's basically a Sig Sauer rifle. It only carries 20 rounds, you know, and our M4s and similar rifles, those AR platforms, M16 platforms, they're standardly hold 30 rounds, and yeah, it's much heavier, it's longer, and I just can't figure out, Martin, like, why would you do this right now? Like, is this what they're doing? They're basically, it looks to me like they're making this giant contract to totally revamp the main battle rifle, and because they've sent off all the other ammunition, they've sent off all the other weapons, so we don't even have like our traditional stuff anymore. We're way down in logistics, and they're talking about just, oh, we'll just, you know, give this billions of dollars of contract to Sig Sauer right now, and we'll revamp and retrain the whole military while we're kind of, you know, flirting with World War III.
You're absolutely right, Brian. And I find it ironic how often the most basic principles of life and peace and life and death and even war are expressed by, very simply, by great thinkers and great poets. And there was a poet 100 years ago, he didn't glorify war at all, he was appalled by it. He was an American who lived in Britain, T.S. Eliot. But he, although he never claimed to be a scientist, he understood the basic rules of the universe, especially the second law of thermodynamics, which is that energy left to itself tends to become disorganized, things run down, things go wrong. And the way T.S. Eliot put it in the poem was, and I paraphrase a little here, but if you look it up, you'll see, he of course said it much better than I will, but basically it's this: between the thought and the deed, between the intention and the act, falls the shadow. Now, what is the shadow? The shadow is entropy. The shadow is everything that can go wrong and that does go wrong. And we see that with our military preparations for war every time. Every program we have to create new weapons, usually they don't work, but even when they work, and the Russians have the same problem, they just stick with things until they make them work. But to make things work in war, it's always more difficult than you think it is. And the other point is another great Irishman, Edmund Burke, warned at the time of the French Revolution. He was a humane man, a moderate in his time, supported the American Revolution, an early champion of democracy. And yet, once the French Revolution started and Europe was embroiled in 25 years of war because of it, Burke said, no more reform until this danger is past. And when he was asked by his reforming friends why he had changed his position, he said, one does not repair your roof in the middle of a thunderstorm. You do not undertake major ambitious reform programs or rearmament programs that will dislocate your production base and your entire armed forces when you are facing an immediate crisis. You must expand your existing production base as quickly and simply as possible. And we are not doing that. The American curse is always to want something new. And when it works brilliantly. But when it doesn't work, we have the F-35, we have the Future Combat System, we have the Zumwalt destroyers. We have $100 billion fiasco after another. The F-35 program is estimated to cost $1.7 trillion over 30 years, and the planes don't work. The engines already have to be replaced. And we're going to see that with the rifles, too. As you say, the individual rifles are excellent. The idea is a good one. But this is not the time to do it. What we need to do now is replenish our existing weapon systems and expand our production bases as quickly as possible because of the threats we face. And we also need to develop our diplomacy to try and avoid, well, we should avoid long-term war with China and Russia in any case. But the idea of having to fight China as well as Russia at the same time with a limited production base, it is inevitable we would lose because General Bradley was right again. The logistics make it clear, and General Milley understands this, and he is trying to avert a national catastrophe.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Martin. The F-35 program, I was a government employee when they put that in, and I listened to my colleagues talk about it and learned about it through the whole thing, and I watched it. I watched the delivery dates get pushed to the right and pushed to the right and pushed to the right. I watched the budget go
exactly
up and up and up. I watched them put it on a carrier deck and light up the engine and melt the carrier deck. It's like, what kind of scientists are you guys using here? You
didn't before. I believe it.
Didn't factor that in.
It only has one gun, one cannon, and the gun doesn't work. It keeps jamming. How can this be? This is the United States of America. We put men on the moon. We're going back there now. How can we screw up something as simple as a 20 or 30 millimeter single firing gun for our main combat aircraft? Yet we have.
Yeah, I know. And Americans, they don't really look into the Russian Sukhoi program, the SU Air Force, you know, the jets that the Russians have. I mean, if you really look at the specs on them versus the F-35, it's like, oh, boy, maybe we should not get in a air battle with these guys. I think the F-35 has probably paid off more in Hollywood movies than it has in actual battle.
Exactly. Exactly. This is the, as you say, it's the Top Gun, it's Tom Cruise Top Gun idea of war. It's a game. It's a fantasy. It's a fairy tale told by Irish grandmothers.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of jets, okay, so What about, and speaking of jets and logistics, what about fuel? I hear that jet fuel is hard to get right now, as well as diesel. Isn't diesel and jet fuel?
That's what I hear too.
You need that in abundance to do a war, right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And the irony is, this has been known before, and it's a broken system. And it isn't a question of evil, spendthrift Republicans or war-hating liberal Democrats. There's a handful of people in both parties in the Congress who, to their great credit, take these things seriously. And when you look at what General Milley and his colleagues in the Air Force and the Army and the Navy, our top commanders testify, they are honorable, intelligent, serious people. They tell truth to power. And even the top senators and congressmen on the committees recognize this. But we have a busted system. And even when men and women of goodwill try and make it work, it isn't working. That's the underlying problem.
Right. It all goes back to that political layer, the political layer. I don't understand if they're just stupid or if they're trying to, embarrass the country and embarrass ourselves. You know, maybe it's just that most of these people have never had a real job and most of them have never been in a military. Maybe that's what
You're
it is.
You're absolutely right. if I may jump in here, if you look back at the Founding Fathers, you look at the Federalist Papers, you look at the composition of the first Congress, and America wasn't even a democracy at that point. It was another 40 years before there was even male suffrage, and it was only for white men, freedom of voting for women, for African Americans, for Hispanic Americans, only came generations later. Democracy doesn't come easily or quickly, even when it comes well eventually. It's a long, slow process. But the original concept for the Congress was that Congress should have people elected from every walk of life. And to some degree, never ideally, there are always more lawyers than anyone else there, obviously, and professional politicians. But in our last 50 years, we have, for various reasons, and I've written on this and I've lectured on this, it's a complex issue, but basically because of reforms that Lyndon Johnson brought in the 1950s, and Johnson loved the Congress, he wanted to make it work better, but he was inept. He poured in money in the wrong ways. He gave huge staffs to congressmen and congresswomen and senators, and as a result, he freed them all up to simply campaign forever and become permanent members of Congress. And actual policy making is not carried out by Congress members or senators, it's carried out by their staff members, and usually they select lousy people for those jobs. So the expertise is not there, and these people don't have a clue. And that's a very fundamental issue, and it's true for Democrats, and it's true for Republicans, and it's a systematic problem.
Yeah, I feel it. I feel it. You know, it's like I look at what these people are doing,
yeah,
and it's just like,
it
my
clearly.
Goodness. Yeah, they're all about culture jamming. They're all about, just promoting whatever the latest thing is. I don't know that any of these people are actually doing their own homework on any of these topics, or if they care, or in Biden's case, if he even has the ability to. I mean, I don't know that he's got the cognitive awareness to even know what the heck is going on. I feel like he's just reading scripts.
You're absolutely right. One of the few prominent politicians, and unfortunately she's been basically removed from the main scene, who I have a very high regard for. I've never met the lady, but she strikes me as exceptionally honest and courageous and outspoken and, above all else, intelligent and sensible and experienced, is a former representative from Hawaii, former Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard. And what's interesting about Ms. Gabbard is that she served several terms in the military, including in combat situations. If one looks back again at President Kennedy and the Cuban Missile Crisis, President Kennedy was not a general in World War II. He served at a very low level. He commanded nothing bigger than a patrol boat, though he did so with great bravery and gallantry. And if he hadn't been the son of a notorious figure, the billionaire Joseph Kennedy, he actually would have been awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor, except his father was a political enemy of President Roosevelt. But he was, A, he was extremely brave, B, he was served in combat, but most important of all, he had served at a very low and modest level in the armed forces of the United States, and he knew how big organizations work and how they do not work. There was one famous occasion during the Cuban Missile Crisis when General LeMay, the head of the Air Force, sent reconnaissance planes provocatively into Russian airspace and over Russia at the very time we were on the brink of nuclear war. And Kennedy, through his Secretary of Defense, ordered the planes brought back as quickly as possible. And when he was asked how it had happened, Kennedy said, "There is always some SOB, don't have to spell out what SOB stands for, who doesn't get the message." The point is, John Kennedy had been in the Navy in World War II. He knew that the best-run military organizations can misfunction, or that people can go off and do their own thing in them, because he had served there himself. That's what we need. We need more people who have served in the military, more people who have serious business backgrounds in Wall Street. I mean, there's a lot of criticism of the new British Prime Minister.
We got 20 seconds left, Martin. I hate to interrupt, but I don't want you to get cut off.
Because he married into a billionaire family, and he was a successful banker. Now, that can certainly has a negative side to it, and it's very clear what
I gotta interrupt and let you go, Martin. We'll pick up here next time.